Welcome to the Monster Hunter Podcast Show. It's episode 13 for the 12th November 2010. And welcome to the Monster Hunter Podcast. I'm Christian from Game Design Reviews.
Hey everyone, this is Social Dissonance, also known as Shepard from YouTube.
And I'm Nick from Before Game Design.
And we are three Monster Hunter enthusiasts who decided to come together on a weekly basis to discuss strategies and share our experience. And it's, episode Lucky 13, and the three Musketeers are reunited again. Yay!
After a brief foray into a frontier of sorts.
Yes. Shepard, you are now finally married. Congratulations to you.
I'm Mr. Shepard, and now there is a Mrs. Shepard. It was a wonderful, beautiful ceremony, best day of my life, and the honeymoon was equally awesome. I heartily recommend all of you take a cruise sometime, all of you young and old listeners. It is a wonderful vacation.
And also, we thank you to all the listeners who sent all the congratulations.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I've often told Christian in private, and I think I've said it publicly a number of times, that I think all of the fans of like this podcast and the YouTube videos that I post, I believe like a good 99.99% of you are like the best people on the internet. Easily. Wow. Like, there's never any negativity. Always people trying to work together to help each other. People offering constructive criticism and receiving constructive criticism equally, which is both, important in both senses. And I'm really happy to be a part of that and to really help facilitate that in whatever small way that I can. So thank you all.
Definitely. And I think this episode shows quite well, the kind of enthusiasm that our listeners are able to, create for this kind of podcast. We have received a couple of really, really great questions and great emails and some kind of... And there is even a surprise at the end of the show.
Oh,
But I won't spoil it to you guys.
Okay. This is the first time hearing of a surprise, but I like surprises, so that's okay.
Well, it's not that big, but so it's
that was really built up.
Oh, now I've built up all the expectations, so I have to, keep it low. But it's still awesome. So, Nick, what have you been doing last week?
Oh, God. What have I been doing since last time? Pretty much just rewriting the proposal for my thesis.
No, still working.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but...
It sounds like a lot.
It sounds like quite a lot.
Because you're committing yourself, like, this is the little document that's going to commit you for between 1 to 2 years of work, right? Basically.
Yes. Well, it's...
Get it right.
I've been working on it for probably about 2 years, so now it's officially going to get accepted, and then I have to finish my research, which will be done probably by April.
So I guess you haven't had any time to play more Monster Hunter Frontier?
I have not. I was actually thinking about it today, and was going to come home today and play, and then forgot, we were doing a podcast today.
Well, we have received. There was a couple of questions about our last episode because I think we. Well, I was listening to the episode again when I was editing it, and I had the impression that some of the questions that were asked, we didn't deal quite correctly with. Not in the same level of quality that our listeners should be used to. So one of the questions that was asked the last time was the thing with how to fight a global with a bow gun. I actually wasn't able to find the video that Shepard made on how to fight a global with a bow gun. It turns out that there is an episode.
Part 38.
It's part 38. I'm going to post the link on the show notes. But the thing is that I have this project called Project Devil Joe, which was kind of like a very fancy name for me to talk about how I'm going to return to Monster Hunter Tri to I finally finished all the online quests. And I can report that in the last week I've been actually playing quite a lot Monster Hunter.
Good.
Yes.
I like to hear that. Oh, yeah.
And I found my enthusiasm for the game. I mean, it's really awesome. For once, I did the right thing, and I dived a little bit into bow guns.
Good call. I mean, because that'll get you through any monster in the game. It may take a little longer. It may take an extra 2 or 3 minutes, but it's worth it.
Yes, and you know, at first sight, you know, bow guns are quite daunting.
Yeah, well, you have to figure out all these ammo types. I mean, it's extra complicated in Try because, you know, in every series before and every series since, bow guns come in a one-piece package, and the only upgrades you go through are you upgrade the power, which is one way, just costs you money, and then you have to decide between do I want a shield, do I want to have more power.
Yeah.
The difference for heavy bow guns, it's a shield or a power barrel. Power barrel increases the range a little bit, increases the damage a little bit. Shield is a shield. And then for light bow guns, I believe it's a silencer? And, I can't remember the other one. I think it's just a silencer.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But, you know, with Try, it's like, I have all these barrels, I have all these frames, I have all these stocks. How do I put these things together in the most optimal way for this one specific monster? And unless you're, like, really into reading deeply into these bowgun parts, and trust me, I spent hours and hours looking at the Monster Hunter Wiki, searching for the absolute most ideal bowgun against every single monster. And like, this is somebody coming with a lot of experience, you know, unless you have, like, some sort of helping hand pushing you in the correct way on how to assemble a bowgun, it can be very daunting because it's going to be very frustrating. You're not going to have the right ammo, or you're going to be like a lot of people who are like, they want Pokemon have bowguns because they want them to have every single shot. It's like, you get a guy who's like, yes, I have normal 2, normal 3, pierce 1, 2, 3, pellet 1, 2, 3, and all the elements. And it's like one shot for each of them, which is not ideal for a bowgun. You know, you want to have, I'm going to go into a little, this is not the bowgun episode, but there will be someday.
Yes.
In short, you want to have your meat and potato shot. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the shot that you're bringing into that fight that you're going to max out on that ammo and the materials of it, and you're going to be shooting that monster over and over and over again with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to have your, you know, your status shots, which you should always have because that's free statuses. Might as well use them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. You might have a backup meat and potato shot. Like, you may go into a fight against Giganox, and you say you're using fire or crag shot as your main damage dealer. But when those run out, especially your crag shots, you're going to want to have normal 2 or pierce 1 or something like that in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And for both pierce 1 and, you know, your meat and potatoes, you want to have about, I would say, never less than 3 shots for any shot that you really hope to use constantly. Now, of course, you know, status shots and the explosive shots are separate, but, like, you know, your main the elementals and then the normal, the raw power shots, you want to have at least 3. I usually go for 4 or 5 if it's pierce, and for normal 2, you really want to have about like 7 or 8 because that's something that you really want to be firing off rapidly. Back to global. And I will continue.
Wait, before you go to global, I find it kind of fascinating that you mentioned Giganox, because you know, that was actually the first monster I tried to, you know, the first big monster I tried to fight with a bowgun.
Okay.
Basically, you know, as you said, you know, there are so many variables when you're assembling. You know, normally when you're choosing weapons, you have to deal with just, you know, one weapon. Yeah.
Yeah, you got your weapon. It's got a status, or it's got an element, or it has neither, but in any case, you upgrade it, and it has more sharpness and more damage. And that's it. You don't have to think beyond that. You can use one powerful raw damage for the entire game, and that's it. You don't have to think about it ever again.
Yeah, and maybe then how your armor relates to that kind of weapon. But in bowguns, you know, you have all these different variables like recoil, you know,
reload,
deviation, weight, and stuff like that.
Deviation. Does it have a shield? Does it not have a shield?
Yeah, and is it a heavy bowgun? Is it mid bowgun?
Is it folding or non-folding?
Yeah,
which, by the way, a folding bowgun, it acts as a heavy bowgun, even if the weight is below 70, by the way.
For all
of you, you can test it out yourself. It may look medium, but it acts like a heavy.
Okay. Well, we have to do a bowgun episode, obviously, now. But that's, you know, just the basic stats. And then on top of it, you have all the things you mentioned, you know, going through the list of all the ammos that you can load into the bowgun. And some of them can be rapid fired, some of them can't be rapid fired, and stuff like that. You know, just filtering all the data and understanding what all this information means is really, really, can be really daunting.
But well, for low rank people,
yeah,
I have the absolute tried and true bow gun you can create
okay.
the whole way through, and
Okay.
I'll give it out. There are three of them,
There are three.
and they overlap a little bit, but that's okay.
Okay.
When you're first starting out, oh, no, actually there are four. I would go with a heavy, well, yeah, heavy bowgun barrel,
okay,
light bowgun frame, and I think medium bowgun stock. You can choose between the different stocks.
Okay.
But that is until you can kill the Royal Ludroth. Now, the Royal Ludroth is very interesting in low rank in that when you kill him and you get access to his materials, his frame is one of the most powerful frames in all of low rank.
Uh-huh.
And so this is like an excellent opportunity for you to kind of like jump ahead in power with the bow gun, because just using those Royal Ludroth parts, you can upgrade it to the maximum level, which I believe is 132 raw power. Now, generally speaking, you only add raw power to your bow gun through your frame and through your barrel.
Uh-huh.
And the frame has to be upgraded with parts. And that is one of the few frames in low rank that you can get like really, really early on. So you're going to be using that frame all the way until Giganox. But before then, you know, swap in the frame. Always use the frame. For the barrel, you can generally just use the heavy bowgun barrel, because a lot of times it's extremely helpful to have a shield. And that's not just for your oh crap moments. That's for helping you time extra attacks to get them in.
Hmm.
So, I mean, a lot of times people, they're first starting out, they look at their shield as just, it's a way to protect me when I screwed up. But when you play more and you get more experience with it, you look at your shield as a way to continue to attacking faster rather than evading or getting hit.
Okay.
But you, of course, if you're feeling confident against the monster, you can swap that out for like a Kuropeko barrel, which has a wide assortment of status shots. And the Kuropeko stock is actually really good because it has recoil plus. So recoil plus on the stock will allow you to fire status level one shots without recoil.
That's one of the things I didn't really realize. You know, what's the deal with recoil? How do I notice that I'm suffering from recoil?
You'll notice because there are three different levels of recoil. There's the standard time, like take out normal one or normal two. It doesn't matter what bowgun you have. You can keep mashing the button and they'll come out very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
The level up from recoil is take any standard bowgun generally and fire status level one.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll kind of have a slight delay and kind of get pushed back a little bit, just a little bit. It'll take about one, like just normal recoil is about 1 second delay.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of recoil, like a status shot, is about 1.5 seconds. And then take something like cluster shot level three on something with high recoil, and the shot is so strong that your character actually like gets knocked back and almost like takes a step back to stop himself from sliding.
Mm-hmm.
And that has, I forget, it's 2 or 2.5 seconds of delay. And generally, unless you're some sort of like super genius and you can use that shot in a sense to actually evade like that, and there are people out there, I am not one of them, but there's some people that have figured out how to evade with the recoil from a high level recoil shot. Generally, you only want to have maybe level two recoil. But even then, I almost always plan my setup around not having any recoil at all. That's because you want to be getting your shots out quickly. If you're constantly getting knocked back by your shots, it's going to reduce your damage over time, or it's going to make you much more susceptible to being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
To digress a little bit to the side about that, whenever you have a bowgun and you have a barrel that has rapid fire, it's very tempting for most people that are first starting off to always use a bowgun with the rapid fire element or whatever it is, rapid fire shot, and using it all the time. Of course, they're aware of the fact that the shots do a little less damage per shot, but over the total amount of time, it adds up to a little bit more. Like if you use normal two rapid fire, I think it adds up to about 1.8, I think,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to like a normal shot, which is just one.
Okay, yeah.
Generally, that will end up having a larger level of recoil, which can actually keep you, like, not only are you stuck in place while all those shots are going, but let's say you're rapid firing something that has, like, an actual level of recoil to it, you're going to be stuck in one place for a very long amount of time. And generally with the bowgun, you want to be maneuverable. Go ahead, Christian.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I read on the various FAQs I read about the bowgun is that when you're doing rapid fire, then having things that reduce recoil actually don't really make any much difference because you always have the same amount of recoil when you're rapid firing.
Yeah, the recoil reduction doesn't apply to that. So, I mean, generally, for most people starting out bowgunning, use a bowgun with a shield. And I'll get back to let me get back to that list. Heavy bowgun barrel.
Yes.
Light bowgun frame. And this is so you have a medium bowgun. This is so you aren't trudging around slowly. If you feel confident, of course, you could always upgrade to a heavy bowgun frame. So heavy bowgun barrel, light bowgun frame, medium bowgun stock, upgrade. You have a Royal Udroth frame, heavy bowgun barrel, and probably, that Kurapeko stock is pretty cool. Going to the next level, after you've killed Giganox, his frame is actually one of the most powerful, in fact, the most powerful frame in all of low rank.
You mean the Stinger frame?
Poison Stinger frame, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then right after you kill him, you can continue to use whatever frame and stock that you had been using before, but you might have to be careful because you might end up going into heavy bowgun territory. Mm-hmm. So that's over 70, like 75 and above. And then finally, the best bowgun you can get in low rank is to take your Rathalos barrel, which good luck getting all these parts because I think it requires a play.
Rathalos
barrel and Rathalos stock plus the Giganox frame. And that is the best bowgun in low rank, in my opinion, because most things are weak to fire and it shoots fire. So that's a big win.
What about the Aquamatic Needler?
No good. No.
Why not?
Because you can, for those like custom built bowguns, you can almost always build something better from your own custom parts. Now it may have interesting attributes to it, but if you piece out the parts in line, you'll find that you do more damage with the bowgun you've built yourself. So the Aquamatic Needler, is that?
No. There's a difference. I think you're referring to some kind of a weapon you can get that is kind of like a fully assembled bowgun.
Right? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Okay. Actually, you're right.
But there
the Aquamatic
also...
Needler is awesome.
Yeah.
Stock is especially awesome. The barrel is great in utility. However, it does not have a shield. I think I had a run through with the heavy bowgun frame, needler stock, and Royal Udroth frame.
Mm-hmm.
Needler is great for just doing raw damage, especially if you're playing online. It adds extra affinity to the weapon, and the bowgun is a weapon in that as you get higher on, each additional point of raw damage or each additional point of affinity you do really. More so than any other weapon, because you're attacking so much more, really adds up to a lot more damage over time.
Well, that's one of the things I realized. I kind of understand now how all the bowgun stuff works, and I spent a lot of time just collecting all the bowgun parts so I can experiment with different parts and how I can assemble new parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went ahead and actually got the needler parts.
Yeah, and they're easy to get.
Well, you have to get rare trade commodities, right?
Yeah, level 2-star commodities, I think, right?
Yeah,
or
two-star.
You probably have to get maybe a 3-star, maybe something from the Raytheon.
Yes, you have the 2-star for the barrel and a 3-star for the stock.
Yeah, and they're both very good. And the stock is actually really good.
Yeah. So I got this one, and I actually created almost everything except for the Raytheon stuff. Then, of course, I also got... I was also removed, as I already told before, I removed the pawn talisman from which I used before, the auto guard talisman.
Well, that wouldn't do you any good with the bowgun anyways.
Yeah. Well, I removed that from my lance, but I also did some lancing stuff, and I rediscovered the joy of being able to use all the talismans I collected over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over the years.
It's about time.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. And I kind of, found some new enthusiasm for the game, and it's really awesome, especially if you discover this, this entire world hidden within the game, which is, this bowgun stuff, which is really, really detailed. But once you get into it, it's also a very different kind of fighting of against the monsters, because it's not so much, being up close to the monsters and making sure that you combo right or combo the doing the right combinations of attacks. Instead, you're further away.
Yeah, you're doing a lot more aiming at a distance, I guess.
And also, especially with the monsters like a Giganox, it's you can attack them at moments where you weren't able to attack them previously.
Yeah, I can actually, I think one of my faster times against the Giganox is using the bowgun. The hammer's the fastest, I think, but the bowgun is actually a close second or third.
Yeah, unfortunately, it takes a lot of practice. So as I said, the first time I was fighting the Giganox, I almost failed it because I ran out of time.
Oh boy! Well,
I got a 5 minutes warning, and after 5 minutes warning, I got the last shot in.
Oh well, congratulations!
Yeah,
I'm glad you killed it. I mean, that's so like exhausting, like a 45-minute fight. Oof!
It's quite exhausting. So I'm not sure what I did wrong, but definitely I need a little bit more practice.
Sure.
About the questions with the global with the bowgun, let me actually try to formulate an answer to that, and you tell me what I was trying wrong. So the global is weak to lightning and fire.
Correct.
It's weaker to lightning than to fire.
Yeah. At that point, you don't have access to lightning.
Exactly. That is what I was thinking. So I was thinking about creating maybe a bowgun that fires fire shots. So that would be kind of like Kurapeko bowgun parts.
Well, I mean, my big thing is against the Gobul, and especially once you get him underwater. If you can keep him on land, it's really not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get underwater, you need to have a shield because he comes at you so quickly and he's flashing and, your range is reduced underwater, so you have to get a lot closer. Your range is half when you're underwater as opposed to on land. And fire shots are just going to be going out way before they get to him.
Okay.
I mean, what I did online, when I did on my Let's Play, and it was kind of an experiment. I had never tried it before. So I tried to do rapid fire sub shots.
That was the second thing. I never used sub shots before, so I wasn't sure how they work.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like pellet shots underwater. They were kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I was just having a good time that run anyways. They're probably better than I give them credit for. Yeah, you can use them. Okay. Against that one fight, because you'll be using the Royal Ludroth barrel, the Royal Ludroth frame. You could probably put on the Royal Ludroth stock as well and just use that as your meat and potato shot. But then again, that's kind of, I had an issue with that when I was fighting him. That was because, as we were saying, there's a recoil there, or you're getting stuck in place.
Okay.
And
that's not good against the global, because he's so agile.
No. So it may be the sort of fight where if you're going to use the bowgun, maybe come back to him later. If you're going through the first time, then it won't really matter. You just have to kill him once.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really need to farm him for anything.
Yeah.
He doesn't really give any good weapons or any good armors for offline, at least.
Okay. And as for the armor, I guess, the good choice for fighting him as a Blade Master is always the Jaggy armor, because it combats the paralysis of his lantern.
Absolutely. The only exception to that would be with the lance, in which case you can go for something with maybe more attack power, like a Baroth was good. I think I used Baroth with the lance. Oh, because you can counter through the flash, so it doesn't matter.
Okay. So actually, I think the bowgun armor, Jaggy armor, still has the anti-paralysis skill, so it's still, I think, a good choice.
I agree. I mean, unless you have a shield, in which case it doesn't matter there either.
You can block it, actually?
Yeah, and I believe when I played online, the Let's Play I had done, the Baroth gunner armor as well.
Sweet. Well, and last but not least, a very vital thing about fighting the global is always using the frog trick, fishing him with a frog.
Yeah, and
so we can bump him afterwards.
Well, there are some people that messaged me, and I didn't have a chance to test this, but if you fight him for the first time, he does not spawn in the area where you fish him out. I think what you can do is go in, get the cutscene over with, then abandon the quest, then start over and go to that one area where you fish him out. I think it's area 4, and then he'll be there.
Yeah.
So if you absolutely want to fight him on land, and you should.
He's much easier on land. He's much easier to evade.
Yeah, I agree.
So, well, that was a very, like a mini Bogan episode, which is kind of a preview of the big Bogan episodes we are going to do in the future, maybe.
Big one. It's gonna be, I'm gonna like lay back in like a recliner. I'm gonna be wearing an ascot and I have a sniffer of cognac and I'm just gonna like ramble about bowguns for about 4.5 hours
Oh,
into
man.
like.
So are you using the new the Office 2010 Excel thing where you can watch the bar over time within within the spreadsheet itself? They have
Oh.
in data set line graphs now, so you can look at output.
I would actually like that. I may have to configure that for my we'll call it, it's like the Iceman Kameth of Bogun discussions.
I'm definitely looking forward to this episode.
It'll be great.
Oh man.
You need to upload these data sets. I'm telling
We
you.
yeah. Like the Shepherd's secret data.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I have these Excel spreadsheets that I did, but they can be improved a little bit. I was looking at them the other day and like
Definitely.
what you need are some good pivot tables. That's what you need.
Well, it's like, I should do a per monster. That's what I should do. It's like, unlimited access to all equipment ever. Like what is the mathematically perfect bowgun to use on them?
I
I
think
may do that sometime.
they should do something like YouTube for but for spreadsheets. Where people can comment and stuff like that. Okay, so the other thing that we discussed last week, which or maybe that we maybe didn't discuss quite as well last week, was the question about Agnactor. And we actually have a listener email from Frinky, and she wrote actually quite a long email, and I'm going to read this email right just right here because it covers a lot of the topics and fills in all the blanks that maybe we have missed. I was listening to episode 12, and I have a few comments about the quick killing of Agnactor question that was posted. First, the only time we have to fight the Agnactor is online for the 5-star key quest, the Molten Monstrosity. An advanced Agnactor quest does show up periodically in online low rank, but low rank Agnactor is best farmed offline. Second, the offline quest is unlocked after you have fought Uragan in level 5 village quest, but Agnactor quest is not a key quest offline. Thirdly, even if you only want to hunt him once to fulfill your online key quests, you do not want to do a shepherd and kill him quickly. That's a nice thing. You do a shepherd.
What? You
Why
don't want to
wouldn't
be awesome.
You don't want to be awesome. You want to take your time, man. The reason for this is that the hardest item to obtain from him is his claws, and you do not want the quest to end until you have broken off the lava of all four claws, and then have broken the claws themselves. If you don't care about obtaining your claws, he can be quickly killed with a hammer. He has frequent, predictable, and extended idle animations when he is firing his beams. Fourthly, I have a look at Wiki again after your broadcast and discovered an interesting fact about the claws and elemental damage that I had not observed before. The front claws are more susceptible to ice damage, and the back claws to water damage. I will also put a plug for some equipment to farm him with. When first farming him offline, I recommend the Pekko set, gemmed up for even more fire resistance, and a talisman for even more fire resistance, or for evade +2. As a weapon, I suggest the Royal Claw Plus Sword and Shield or the Shark Attack Lance. The Pekko set has four things going for it: evade, defense up low, fire defense, and the greater utility of recovery items. For high rank Agnactor farming, I like Shark Attack and the low rank Agnactor set, which I overforge as quickly as possible. I will also promote his hammer, the gun hammer, over the Pekko Rathalos hammer path. The low rank gun hammer plus is almost as powerful as the high rank hurricane hammer. It's much easier to make, and it looks so much cooler. Thank you for doing the podcast. It's much needed and appreciated. Cheers, Frankie.
My only comment about the claws is they can be obtained as a car reward, and it's like a humongous pain in the butt to break all four claws. If you can do it.
Well, if you're doing it online with a team, then it might be easier.
The front claws are easy because all you gotta do is throw them in a pit trap, and you can just sit there and bash them as much as you want.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the back ones that started getting to you. I thought that each pair of claws was a percent chance for one drop.
That's what I also thought. When I was farming in, and I was farming... Actually, you know, that's a weird thing. You know, that shows that we are kind of getting rusty with our One Must Hunter experience.
Yeah, what are you guys smoking?
Because I have been actually farming this guy because I wanted to have his armor.
He was the, I think the last time I played, it was me and, however you say his name, Nazla. We just fought him again and again and again and again. So I think I'm blurring together all of the random facts we heard from random people that we were fighting.
So
because you have to break all four claws in order to get a 54% chance to get a claw.
But when you just break a couple of claws, you know, there's two claws, you don't get anything?
No. If you break all four claws, you get one chance at 54% to get a claw.
Ah.
But I thought you could get two claws from him.
Well, I don't know.
And rewards.
Maybe. I mean, maybe I could be wrong. You know, maybe you get two rather than one, which would be awesome. But otherwise, you can just get them in carve rewards, and you get 8%, which isn't good, but it's not really bad. I mean, you'd probably get about one claw for every kill.
Okay.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, when I'm killing stuff, I just usually enjoy killing them. I mean, I don't know the number of claws you would need to make every single thing that the Agnaktor has, but it's probably not too much based on how much of a pain it is to get them.
Yeah, well, I must admit, I have been fighting in quite a lot, and it explains quite a good deal, because I've been fighting him quite a lot because I wanted to have his entire armor set, and I also wanted to have his lance.
Yeah, well, Frankie is correct in that. It is an absolutely amazing armor set, especially for those of you using lances, because it helps boost your countering ability so much.
Yes, exactly. That's why I really wanted to have his armor, and it's really, really quite cool.
Yeah. It really is.
So I when I was fighting him, I was always just attacking the front claws, and I thought that this was enough to get the claws. I got the claws, but now that you mention it, it might have been just a carve reward.
Yeah, I mean, probably. I mean, you know, if you're on, I'd almost even recommend farming. If you're farming claws, do it. It's online. You can go up with like people with bow guns that would be inflicting a bunch of status ailments like paralysis, stuff like that. That would make farming the claws a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, hitting the back claws is really, really a pain.
Yeah. I think people use hammers on that. Like they mostly aim for super pounds in the back claw. Mm. But I don't know.
Okay. Well, Frankie, thank you a lot for cleaning this stuff up. It's really, really awesome that you were able to bring together all those informations. I think we couldn't have done it much better.
Yes.
Thank you very much. So, should we move on to the questions?
It's been like 40 minutes. Yeah, questions.
Oh, well, we just have a couple of questions today.
No, but definitely, let's get through them. I love questions.
All right. So we have a question from Anonymous on Tumblr. I was thinking about it. If you're posting a question on Tumblr, it would be really awesome if you just could, you know, write your name underneath so we don't have
something.
And Anonymous, I mean...
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a real name. You can make it up. You can even pretend you're me. You can even post, like, social dissonance. Yeah. Says, like,
or maybe you can do something like, you know, invent a name.
Yeah.
So it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a Devil Bob?
Surprise us.
As opposed to Devil Joe? I mean, it's just an idea. I just came up with that, right?
Yeah. It's just, you know, Anonymous is just not so hot. Anyway, so this question is, hi guys, I love your podcast so far. I am around Hunter rank 30 or so and have been exclusively using sword and shield. Should I switch to another weapon soon? And if so, which one should I switch to? Keep in mind, I only have a Wiimote and Nunchuck, so some weapons controls may be hard. Thanks.
What do you think, Nick?
I think sticking to one weapon and one weapon only is the wrong way to go about things.
That's a good...
I think it's nice to have a diverse palette. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
I agree. When you were first starting off, like you have just cracked open your case of Monster Hunter Tri and you're running around the Moga Forest. Like, yeah, pick one weapon and stick with it. But really, when you start experimenting with different weapons is when the game starts to get really fun.
Yeah.
And it's a real pain against some monsters with a sword and shield. Urgon can be really hard until you get to be very maneuverable because, like, he's one monster where you're going to be bouncing all the time until you can circle around to behind him.
Yeah.
And so once you hit Urgon, which... He said he was Hunter Rank 30?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. You know, Hunter Rank 30 is really good.
Good. I mean, so certainly he hasn't had any issue with the Urgon. Maybe he's been able to get above that, but I would still recommend, you know, maybe like trying out the Lance, maybe a Bogon. One of those. Maybe a Hammer.
Hammer, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Hammer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have received a ton of suggestions, and we're still receiving even more, that using the Wiimote and Nunchuck is not that hard, and it's actually quite doable, and that you can use all the weapons quite fine.
Well, if you're under the age of 15 and have yet to receive any wrist injuries in your life, and you're not using the Lance, yes.
Yes. Well, even we received a couple of emails from your listeners which were older, and they still said that it's quite okay.
Okay, well, I mean, you know, it's opinion. I mean, I would have to be in full arm braces after about like 2 days of me playing the game based on how much I use the Lance. They would have to like, you know, put me on some sort of iron cross and completely immobilize me so I would have the chance to heal again.
Well, that's because you're shepherding every monster.
And you are all my lost lambs.
Oh my.
That's a little Christian humor for you.
Oh snap.
God.
Oh man, kill me now before I make another pun.
All right, moving on. Next Tumblr message is from James W. Cook, 1991. That's an awesome name. Okay, hi guys. First off, love the podcast and Shepherd Let's Play series. And now to the question. I have been watching Shepherd Let's Play and I've been seriously thinking about starting up using the Lance. And so far, I have been relatively successful. My main concern is I just entered high rank, Hunter rank 36, and I'm still unsure of exactly what counter canceling is. I know how to counter, and I'm practicing the timings. My other issue is what sets would you guys recommend for lancing? Hope to hear back and keep up the good work. Actually, that's actually an excellent question. I've been wondering this as well, because I've been always listening to hearing, you know, the term counter canceling, and I'm just, you know, experiencing this entire new world of countering, and I was wondering if what I'm doing is actually counter canceling, or if counter canceling is something get entirely different.
Okay, Nick, do you want me to answer this, or you're familiar with counter canceling, right?
I am, but I don't know how to describe it.
Oh,
okay.
So I'll leave it for you.
Here, okay. Canceling. When people say canceling, and this goes for fighting games as much as it goes for Monster Hunter, they're saying they're using something in their moveset to reduce the delay of their next action. So a easy way to cancel a delay with a lance is do an attack and then evade to any direction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to time the amount of time it took for you to do your attack and go back to the ready position,
mm-hmm.
versus and do the full three hit combo, that would be the most the easiest way to see how this goes. Do the full three hit combo. Observe the amount of time it takes for you to go through that full three hits and retract your weapon back so you can start moving again, versus doing that and then evading to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll notice that evading to the side will allow you to not only reposition yourself, but it will reduce the delay in getting your weapon back to the ready position, allowing you to attack even faster.
Yeah, so that's kind of like a very basic combo, doing three attacks with something and then pressing dodge to actually to dodge for once, but also to be able to attack more quickly.
Yeah, you're canceling the delay by, rather than going through the full animation of getting back to a normal attack, you are canceling to a shorter amount of time of movement, it's a shorter amount of time of recovery from evading.
Okay, so what is counter-canceling now?
Counter-canceling is using the counter move in a similar way to using the evade move. Mm-hmm. And they have two similar but different strategic, you know, results. Mm-hmm. In that you will usually evade cancel if you need to reposition yourself, or generally it's just to reposition yourself, because generally you will get attacks out faster if you counter cancel. And the way you do that is you do your full three-hit combo, and then you enter a counter by, as soon as you've, you know, you're completing your last attack, you hold down R, perform your counter the way you normally perform it. If you're using the classic controller pro like I am, I hold down R and I press, A?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll start to enter the counter, but let go of R and just mash the attack button.
Mm-hmm.
And what you will do is, rather than go through the whole counter animation, if you do it early enough, you will cancel out of the counter. You will do a counter cancel into a new attack.
Ah, okay, I understand. So you start a counter, but then cancel the counter and go into another attack.
Yeah, you are canceling the counter by attacking. So you're doing you're canceling two things. You're canceling your previous attack animation, and you're canceling the counter. It just by going into another attack.
Okay.
And so that is the somewhat, if not, well, we can just call it, that's the advanced technique that the instruction manual actually hints to. It's a really ambiguously worded, but if you go to the Lance section of the instruction manual, it says, you know, real masters of the counter will learn to cancel their attacks. And you read that, you're like, what the heck's going on? And then I had no idea about it, but then like 2.5 weeks in, somebody in IRC channel said, hey, everyone, look at this video. And it was some Japanese guy, like, you know, busting through the Three Wyverns arena quest. And he was doing all these counter cancels, and I was like, wow, that's really amazing. And it takes a while to get used to, but, you know, learn evasion cancels and learn counter canceling, and that's really when you can start using the Lance very effectively. People that hate the Lance don't know how to cancel their attack animation, and they get destroyed. And people that do know how to cancel will be able to guard every attack in the game and will get their attacks out 2 to 3 times as much.
I never realized that you can also combo in the counter as well. I thought you have to, you know, go into blocking, and then from blocking you can go into counter.
Mm-hmm.
But you can do it at any point. You can just press R and attack and go into counter
almost,
at any point.
Almost any time.
Wow.
The counter, I believe, actually comes out faster than blocking.
Oh, yeah. Blocking takes quite a long time.
Yeah, it takes, let's say, getting into a block, depending on the animation, could take a while. The counter comes out almost immediately, like maybe a fifth of a second.
Hmm.
And it's always counter. Always counter if you can. Enjoy it while you can, because once you get to Monster Hunter Portable 3rd,
yeah,
the counter cancel has been nerfed.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, seriously. Here, Monster Hunter is a game about risk versus reward when it comes to choosing your attacks against a monster against a certain body part. And the reason why the Lance is really a broken weapon in Monster Hunter Tri is it takes that dynamic and removes it. And that by counter-canceling, you can have a nearly uninterrupted stream of attacks without ever having to worry about being hit by anything, so long as you time your counters correctly. In Monster Hunter Portable 3rd, you cannot counter after the third attack. You have to evade, which, you know, is good, because maybe people will finally learn to evade with lances again rather than just canceling, countering.
Well, that's something I will need to try out.
I have a video.
Yeah, I saw it, but the problem is that in this video you don't really see what you're pressing, so, you know, it just looks like...
True.
So I looked at this video and I was like, okay, yeah, well, he's kind of, you know, countering, but I never realized that you were doing it
Yep.
You were canceling something.
Yeah, it's the Three Wyverns online request. We'll post a link to it in the show.
Definitely, notes. I'm gonna do a note quite quickly. Okay, so moving on to the next question. This one is from, I think it's from Unknown Wanderer on Tumblr, and he's writing, "Hey there, Christian and Social, and I guess Nick as well, but he didn't write it because
I've been missing.
You've been missing for so long time, man.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's so great that you're back with us. And you can help us answering this question, which is what it goes like this. It was mentioned that elemental shots for bowguns ignore armor if the monster is weak to the element. Does this mean you can hit...
That does... Social's going crazy over here. Keep on.
Okay. Does this mean that you can hit the monster anywhere and always do full damage?
What did you guys say last week?
No, that we didn't speak about bowguns last week. We're innocent.
Okay, so wait. Can you repeat that? Ignore armor?
Okay, once more. It was mentioned that elemental shots for bowguns ignore armor.
Okay, well, let me just start over. When you use a elemental bowgun shot, it is actually, in a sense, two different types of damage happening simultaneously.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
All elemental shots have some component of raw damage. Usually... approximately half of what its corresponding shot would be. I believe fire shot, very similar to normal two shot, does 7 raw damage. Mm-hmm. And I think pierce type shots, which are all the other ones, well, except for dragon, does 5 damage per hit of raw. And then dragon is actually very similar to pierce 3, and it does almost no raw damage, but I think it does 1. So it does that damage, mm-hmm. and that raw damage is calculated exactly as any other raw damage shot would go. Aside from that, each shot has some percentage of your total raw power added as elemental damage. So for fire, oh boy. Can I remember all of these numbers? I think it's 45% of your raw damage is translated into fire elemental damage, which is then received by the monster corresponding to that part of the body that it has that elemental weakness of. Generally speaking, you can assume that if a monster is really, really weak to an element, it takes about 30% mm-hmm. from that. So 30% of 45% of your raw damage is what that monster takes in elemental.
Additionally?
In addition to that raw damage.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So add the two together, and that's the amount of damage it receives. Pierce shots do 15% of your raw damage per hit, and they hit 3 times. Mm-hmm. So if you add it up, that's 45%. But in general, it's kind of hard to hit all 3 shots. Just, you know, not always, but it kind of is. So it's always best to use fire shot because that's awesome. Fire is awesome. But ice, thunder, and water,
So generally, it's the answer would be no. It's important where you hit the monster if you're using elemental shots.
Yes, absolutely. Because you are not only aiming. You always want to be aiming for the weakest part of the monster, and you should, even if you're using an elemental shot. I mean, generally, if you're aiming for the weakest raw damage part, usually that corresponds to the weakest elemental part. And I know we're going to get angry comments from people saying, oh, that's not true. This monster takes 50% damage in the face, but, you know, 20% from shot damage. I know the Urgon. I know. But generally, you want to be aiming for the most damage possible. So even if your Agnactor takes slightly more elemental damage in the front claws as opposed to the back claws, forget about, well, I mean, if you have to break the claws, shoot them. But otherwise, just aim for the weak spot that is always weak.
Mm-hmm.
In general.
Okay.
Especially if you're using a pierce shot. So in terms of ignoring armor, let me go back to that, because that thing like squeezed my brain and made it hurt. It's not that it ignores armor, it's that there's two different levels of damage the monster receives mm-hmm. simultaneously. So yeah, the amount of elemental damage the monster receives is completely separate from the amount of raw damage it receives, but, you know, they're usually about the same. I mean, you know, Raytheon takes a ton of raw damage in the face. Maybe about 30% from thunder, you know, I can talk all day about specific monsters, but yeah. that's how elemental damage works for melee weapons too. So that's really why when you're using a weapon with water damage on it and you're slashing that Urgon in the face, it breaks so much easier than just a raw damage alone. Not only because you're not, well, you know, whether you're bouncing or not, the face doesn't take much raw damage, but it takes an awful lot of elemental damage.
Okay.
Okay. So was there another question in that comment?
No. It's just you know, a lot of things mixed together. So okay. I guess the armor is something different than the defense of the individual yeah. body parts.
Yeah. And while I'm at it, let me clarify status shots.
Yes.
Doesn't matter where they hit. It's the same status all over. Doesn't matter. However.
So that's maybe the mix up.
Well. Status shots do raw damage as well.
Uh-huh.
And it follows the same rule in that, you know, some parts of the monster's body takes more shot damage than others. Now, bowguns, I don't want to say something that's going to get me in trouble, but bowguns generally do the same amount of shot damage all over the monster's body. Of course, the weak part's going to take slightly more.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, bowguns are fairly forgiving in where you hit the monster.
That was actually kind of, well, I must admit that I'm not that good of a bowgun user yet, so I was basically, you know, firing in a general direction of the monster.
aim for the weak spot, or aim, yeah. Usually there's something on a monster you want to break, and yeah, break yeah. it first, and yeah. then aim for the head, usually. But yeah. it doesn't matter that much. That's why I use pellet shots a lot, because it doesn't matter. It's just damage.
Yeah. Okay, so the next question is, well, there are two questions, well, comments from a longtime listener called Charnak, and he wrote us, "Hi guys, I love the podcast. Oh yeah, my question. I was wondering, do recover shots heal monsters too? Oh, and I thank you for the podcast. I listen to them while Rathalos owns me in the 6-star Death of Sky and Sea quests. I cannot wait to watch how it's done on socials. Let's play video."
Oh boy!
First of all, I would join in. That's one of the quests I totally failed at. I tried it a couple of times. I always ran out of time, and it was so frustrating. I decided to just leave it and go online first. So I'm also looking forward to watch shepherding this quest.
Yeah, I think I'm going to use a bowgun on that one.
Oh yeah, totally on us.
Pretty sure, or something with raw damage. But I think I'm going to pull the bowgun out for the weapon that needs it the most, and or the quest that needs it the most, and that's going to be one. Nick, you know the answer to this question, right?
Considering, I think the only time I've ever actually used a bowgun was on. Oh God, I couldn't remember this monster's name last time. Who's the legendary guy that's in the volcano at the end of Tri?
Cetus?
Alatrion.
Alatrion. That's the only time I've ever used a bowgun.
Ah.
Okay. I can answer. Well, I mean, a recover shot is basically like you're shooting. I think recover shot level 1 is kind of like a potion, and recover shot level 2 is kind of like a mega potion. This is a little sad. I almost never get shot by them. I'm usually the one shooting them. always the giver.
Nice person.
There's actually a game that somebody has invented. This is like a web page I saw the other day, and it's posted. I can probably find the link for this. It's a game somebody invented for those of you hunters out there that have pretty much finished Tri, and it's a game played with 4 people. Three people go in with no armor, and one person goes in with just. I think the three people can actually wear a helmet, but nothing else. They just have their weapon, and one person can come in whatever gear they want. And generally, they'll be using a bowgun. In fact, a bowgun would be the only weapon that would make sense, because that one person, it's their job to keep the monster alive as long as possible so it kills the other three people. And the way they do this is through clever use of dung bombs, flash bombs to disorientate the players, and recovery shots, which can be used on monsters and will heal them.
Man, I need some smoke bombs in there.
Smoke bombs, of course. Bring smoke bombs, dung bombs, flash bombs,
the smoke bomb, flash bomb combo. That's killed so many people. What? You just get tired of, you know, doing good at a game after a while, I guess.
Yeah, you need to give yourself some artificial limitations. And so,
sure. Why not?
I'm sure this question is more academic and it is necessarily something this person has run into a lot of trouble with.
I don't know. Maybe I can imagine that when you're using recovery shots, then maybe you're worried that you might accidentally hit the monster.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you do, I mean, that sucks. But yeah. Generally, you're shooting a recovery shot because you're out of life powders, and your friend that is kind of new to the game and is using one hand only to swing the Wii remote around frantically is about to die. And you want to heal them, and so you shoot a recovery shot at them. So I would say it's always worth it because at least you prevented somebody from dying.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
If they didn't really need it, then maybe you shouldn't shoot it. But.
How significant is the effect on the monster? I mean, does the monster have the same amount of life points than a player? I guess not, right?
Generally, the amount that you're going to heal them with is negligible, sort of. You know, just a little bit. I mean, you know. It heals them the same amount that it heals a player. The only difference is that players usually cap out at about 200 life, and monsters usually have around 3,000, 4,000.
Okay, so it's a huge difference.
Yeah, you can really change things if you really focus on healing the monster, but if it's just one or two shots, it's not going to be a big deal.
So basically don't worry about it. Just keep on using the recover shots.
And... Yeah, if you healing a player prevented them from dying, then the amount of damage they did, you know, the opportunity cost. Let's get this master's degree in use. The opportunity cost of them staying there and attacking is much better than the opportunity cost of them dying and having to run back after being kitty carted. Not to mention, you know, maybe you'll fail the quest. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. That's always a possibility. Okay, so finally, that's not really a question, but we received a link for a tutorial on how to get the code for the demo of Monster Hunter 3rd from a listener called Gui, well, that's a very difficult thing to pronounce. Guk Ui Gui? I can't pronounce it. Well, he's Mike.
You call him Gui.
Maybe. I just call him Mike.
Okay. Mike. Mike wants a video tutorial on how to get the code.
No. He sent us a tutorial.
Did.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. That's
nice.
Shepard, you got a code, right?
Well, I mean, it was kind of supplied to me. I mean,
somebody sent you the code.
Yeah, you know, I was, you know, I'm kind of lucky. I mean,
okay.
Exclusive channels in order to receive a code.
See, Mike sent us a tutorial, and it's quite complicated actually, because you have to actually use an iPhone to visit a mobile website, and you have to click on some Japanese links there to kind of get a promotion and it's running. And then
yes, that's true. In order to get your own original code, you have to go through those steps. I was provided a PlayStation Network account
that's amazing.
Yeah, I was given an account I could log into and just download the demo.
Okay. The Mike also provided us with even more stuff. He provided us with an application like a plug-in for Firefox, so you don't actually need an iPhone to get all the stuff.
Nice.
So we can use the Firefox to access this website and enter in this promotion thing. And then once you get the code, you still need a Japanese account. But then Mike is so awesome. He actually provided us even with a YouTube video on how to get the Japanese PSN account.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I created my own Japanese PSN account from which I downloaded the Japanese Ad Hoc Party and would occasionally play with Japanese players, which, by the way, it's nice seeing the difference between Japanese players and U.S. players. Very, very different.
This is different.
Very polite.
I heard about that, yes.
I would use a life powder when I'd play Monster Hunter Unite with them, which, by the way, I was talking to you about this earlier, Christian, but, of course, that was off the air. You can actually – it's using Ad Hoc Party on the PS3. It will kind of make the game region-free in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they were playing Monster Hunter Portable 2nd G and I was playing Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, we'd be able to play together. Whenever I would use a life powder, they were always, like, so kind because there's voice chat. They would always go, Ikimashou, which I believe – you know Japanese, right, yeah. Nick?
I know enough to get me in trouble, I guess.
which I know is just a polite form of saying thank you, but that's not. I don't want to speak ill of American players. They're always very appreciative, but it was like constant, nonstop. Like, I bring in materials for 13 life powders. I use life powders 13 times. I would get 13 Ikimashous. Very nice. Very polite.
So how does it work in Korea? Is it similar, Nick?
We actually, the guild that we're in game, the guild message is constantly, don't interact with the Koreans.
Okay.
I don't know how they actually are, or if they've just made fools of themselves and kind of have a bad name.
Okay. Maybe the problem is that the Americans or Western people are not polite enough.
I mean, I've never really met many bad mannered people playing Monster Hunter on the American
Monster Hunter.
But you know, it's just, I mean, maybe it's just such a novel cultural experience that I'm making more of it than it actually is. There was one interesting time I played, and I'm sure we're going way over an hour at this point.
A little bit about an hour, but it's still okay.
I posted this one like event quest that you had to download. And it was so cool because it's like it listed like four monsters, and it was like red Kezu,
uh-huh.
Black Diablos, green Plesioth, and then the fourth monster was listed as Mystery. Yeah, it was like really cool. Like I really wanted to find out what that last one was, and I posted it in the Japanese game. Like I never played it on the American servers. I downloaded it and I hopped on to the Japan servers. I'm like, hey, let's play this. I mean, I didn't say that. I mean, they wouldn't have known what I said, or maybe they would have, but they didn't say. I posted it, and like we were actually doing like really bad. Like I was doing okay. Like I wasn't dying, but like there was these two other people dying a lot.
Uh-huh.
And, like you can tell they were like getting like really frustrated, and like they didn't want to do the quest anymore. So the guy whose room it was actually just ended up kicking those two people, locking the room, and we just completed it together. And by the way, the last monster, for those of you that wanted to know, it was a red a terror.
Wait. Spoiler.
Well, I'm sorry. Well, you know, this was 9-star G rank quest Monster Hunter Freedom Unite. Sorry, it wasn't a new monster.
Now that we have a spoiler alert, you can go ahead and say it. What kind of monster was it?
It was a monster that was weak to water and lightning, which is rare. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's a weird combination.
Its shell is weak to water, I believe.
Oh, okay. You know how awesome Mike is?
Even more awesome than we previously thought.
Even more awesome because he actually even supplied us with a code.
Oh wow.
A personal you know, you guys divvied up between yourselves. I'm golden. I've done videos.
So Nick, I believe you don't have a PSP yet, right?
I do not. No, I'm still. Hopefully, I'll get one at the end of probably this month.
So Christian, why don't you get it, put it onto your PSN account, and then you can share that PSN account with Nick, and then two of you guys could have it together. But I mean, you know,
yes.
By the end of the month, Nick, you know, the game's going to be out.
That's true.
Hmm.
Which actually, for us Americans, that will probably be Tuesday mid-noon.
So you're going
when
to
I'm
do
at work.
You're going to do a midnight release party thing?
Oh man! Well, I had that other video up as early as humanly possible, and yet there were still some people that beat me to it. So, yeah, I'll have plenty of time throughout that week to record videos, and I'll certainly be. I mean, I don't know if people would be, appreciate a blind let's play of that, but I guess if there was anyone that wanted to, you know, could do it, I guess that'd probably be me.
Are you going to get a digital version of the game?
Well, that's the only problem is I've read rumors or at least some reports that there will not be a digital version.
Oh.
And if there's not a digital version, then I need to import it.
You have to wait until it arrives. That will be horrible.
Well, I don't live far from New York, Christian. I would be willing to get myself down to New York, and I know some dude will have it in, you know, one of those areas by the second. Oh, yes.
Okay, so I guess I will be the last one who will be playing it. But I'm certainly looking forward to try it. And I think I want to have the physical version. I don't want the digital version.
I want the physical version. However, if I can get the digital version on the 30th as opposed to a physical version on the 2nd,
Well, I must say, I can understand that with you because you played Monster Hunter Tri for so long, but I still have a couple of things to do in Monster Hunter Tri, so I'm not that eager to jump over. However, you know, we've been talking about it so much, and I'm quite hyped about the game. So I'm certainly quite thankful that Mike provided us with a code, and I'm certainly looking forward to try it out.
Go on.
So, you know, that's how awesome our listeners are. Thank you a lot. And thank you for everybody else who were sending these excellent questions today. Please do keep them coming. And if you want to get in touch with us, simply write us an email to monsterhuntercast@googlemail.com or comment on our blog at monsterhunterpodcast.tumblr.com. Just, you know, maybe add a name at the bottom of your comment so we can refer to you.
And something that Christian can pronounce.
Yeah, that's super cool. That would be so awesome.
You could put a little phonetic components in there.
yeah, maybe. Or maybe you can post like a video of how to pronounce it. So I think next episode will be on Thursday, as always.
Okay.
And Nick, are you also maybe able to join us on next Thursday?
Yes, I should be able to.
That's so awesome.
Wednesdays are my busy days, so it was hard for me to get here when we were still doing it on Wednesdays.
Okay, so well, that we will be back again as initially. We wish you a good hunt. And remember, you don't need to shepherd every monster.
I do, I can't help it.
Why would you want to fight it longer?